Life.
A podcast of the cinema.
That is correct.
Yes.
Starring Alonzo Duralde. That's not me. You're Alonzo Duralde.
And you're Dave White.
I'm Dave White. I'm a film critic. Sometimes I write for The Wrap. Most of the time, I'm just cooking dinner. You're the star, though, of this enterprise. You're the face. You're the face on the televisions of internet people, the internet television. You're on What the Flick, which is the Young Turks. That's the internet.
Yes.
And you're also the
film reviews editor
of The Wrap. I'm sorry. I'm distracted by our neighbor's barking dog. And maybe if you've been listening to Linoleum Knife for a long time,
you know this is a running theme.
Well,
this is different neighbors.
It used to be a running theme.
That's true.
It used to be that the neighbors underneath us,
directly below us,
had screechy, yappy two dogs.
Like, who were never, ever happy about being left home alone.
And something weird is happening today on the other end of the building, and it appears that there is a door that is open and yet locked.
Well, there's...
But not...
There's the wooden door, and then there's the sort of...
The metal security door.
So they seem to have left the wooden door open, the security gate locked...
And then left.
And left the dogs by themselves.
And the dogs are freaking out.
So not only are the dogs freaking out, but because the door is open, we can hear that freak out quite well at the other end of the building.
Yeah. So if you hear a faint yap, yap, yap in the back...
That's what that is.
Our neighbor's dogs having a conniption.
Yeah.
So welcome to low... fidelity audio recordings for the podcast world, because that's what this is.
Yes.
If you were ever mistaken and thinking, oh, they go to a studio.
These are professionals.
No. Mm-mm. This is our dining room table.
It is indeed.
Remember back in the day when we first started this in 2010
uh-huh.
and we had the old dining room table?
Oh, the squeaky Formica one?
The squeaky old vintage metal Formica one?
Yeah.
And it was so squeaky that we couldn't touch it during the podcast.
Lest it...
Or else it would squeak. Yeah. So I feel like audio-wise, I feel like we've made a step up when we got the new sturdy table.
Yes. Baby steps.
But, you know, this may never be a studio situation.
Doubt it.
We may never end up in a studio. You know, who knows? I won't never say never.
Sure.
But, it's unlikely.
At this rate. But no one's tuning in for the, you know, quadraphonic sound.
Well, you don't know that.
I would hope they're not.
Maybe some people did tune in once and think, oh my God, I can't even stand to listen.
Distinctly possible.
To all the ambient noise going on around them.
The barking dogs.
And the barking dogs.
Cars
and the
without mufflers. Yeah. And the, yeah.
Yeah, so... How are you today, husband? Oh, by the way, we're married, too. If this is your first time listening,
yes,
we're married to each other.
True.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm just...
Do you think we're still the only gay married film critics who are actual working film critics?
No one else that
has stepped up. Yeah.
I would be curious to know if there are any others out there, but yeah.
Like, if we had a brand...
Mm-hmm. That's our shtick?
It's not enough of a shtick. I mean, being the only ones,
right,
it makes us unique. But
I was thinking about this.
If we had a shtick, if we've got a brand, I think it's just the fact that we just talk about the barking dogs and what's for dinner.
This is true.
In addition to the current cinema,
I was thinking about this, that if we really were gonna work that angle.
If we were going to go pro.
Yeah.
Okay.
That we would have called this show The Husbands, which is what we were nicknamed by one of the DJs at KCRW.
No. Don't minimize him. Don't reduce him to that.
Okay, fine. Nick Harcourt.
No. You don't even know who you're talking about.
Okay, I forget this story then. Somebody over at KCRW.
Hang on. Dear Jolie and Madeline Brandt, if you happen to be listening.
Mm-hmm.
I apologize on behalf of stupid Alonzo Duralde. Jason Bentley,
yeah. That's it. Okay, I knew it was
Jason Bentley of KCRW.
Yes. Sorry.
Referred to us as The Husbands.
Right.
on the air one day. And then it kind of stuck at KCRW.
Right.
That was our, that was what people were calling us. I don't like that as a name for our podcast, though, because it suggests that we're going to...
talk about domesticity?
I mean, we do that.
Yeah.
But it suggests that that's all we got.
Right.
You know. I remember back in the day when I first started writing film reviews for iFilm. Back in 1999.
Yes.
And 17 years ago. And I eventually worked my way up to the place where I was the only person writing about movies on the site. And part of that gig was writing a weekly column in addition to...
Oh, that's right.
God, in addition to writing all the movie reviews.
And you, they made you review
everything,
single movie that opened in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You, no one could do that now.
No.
Because now 30 movies will open on a given Friday.
Right, right.
But you were still covering, like...
I was gunning it.
Like these, you know, Turkish movies that were going to play on one screen.
And, you know. Lest that seem like an insane amount of work, for the first, my entire time at iFilm, and then again, my time at movies.com from 2005 to roughly 2010, I was not writing proper film reviews.
They were improper.
They were bullet point nuggets, essentially.
Sure. But like, you still had to see everything.
I had to see everything. But the writing of a movie review for the for iFilm and for movies.com initially, before I switched over to the sort of long form standard, what everyone thinks of as a movie review.
Right.
It was literally like five bullet points with catchy, you know,
when to go to the bathroom.
When to go to the bathroom. Yeah, like that kind of thing. And those took 30 minutes to write, if that much time. Right. And so I didn't become a real film critic until 2010, when movies.com said, hey, do you want to go to like the regular movie review format? Do you want to write a real movie review? And I said,
like a real live boy?
Yes, I actually do. I've wanted to do this for years now, and I just felt hemmed in by this format. No offense to the wonderful man who invented that format for me, my former editor, Lou Harris, but I was getting restless in that format.
Sure.
I wasn't happy. And when people said, when people would say to me, you're a film critic, I'd say, not really, because they hired me to just write goofy stuff about movies. They didn't hire me to be a film critic.
I didn't feel
like I had earned that name.
Well, you were writing informed goofy stuff.
Okay. Sure. But it was still
goofy stuff.
Every blurb was supposed to end with a little bit of a zinger, right. You know, some kind of punchline or something, like comedy writing, but not by someone who is a comic.
That kind.
Yeah. You know, not comedy. And so, that was why I got hired, because Lou said, "Oh, you made me laugh."
Right.
They didn't hire legit film critics for that job. They hired me just because I made Lou laugh.
But you're legit now.
I'm whatever now. But like but I'm but at least I can say, yes, I write proper film reviews now. Like a real boy. Yeah. So where was I going with this?
I have no idea.
I don't know what I was about to talk about. I've completely lost my train of thought. Sorry.
It's Christmas. Yeah. Not a ton of movies this week. Usually,
two of them. There are two, in fact.
There's a lot. I guess
this podcast is going to be 45 minutes. You haven't seen a podcast this short since 2011, when we were still sort of like figuring out how long these things were going to be.
I think they're going to be barreling a lot into the last couple of weeks, and obviously a lot of films that will be opening in L.A. and New York for Oscar consideration and not elsewhere until later on. Actually, one of those movies is this weekend is I Am Not Your Negro is opening, but that's really
which
not,
you have seen and I have not in your review.
Is on What the Flick.
Is on What the Flick.
But yeah. It'll be opening wide in February, or at least, you know, documentary wide, and we'll talk about it then, and I'll we'll have lots more to say about it then. But it's great. If you are in L.A. and it's near you, go see it. It's terrific. But yeah, so we're pretty much talking about the big wide release of the weekend is Office Christmas Party, and the limited release of the weekend is the much looked forward to La La Land.
What? How many screens did La La Land open on this weekend?
I don't know.
Pause it. I'm going to find out the answer to
okay.
that.
Okay. Five. The answer is five.
Yes. Why don't we do the following?
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about what it's about.
Uh-huh.
And then we can talk about, I don't want to say too much about it because there are so few people who, while listening to the show, will have even had a chance to see the film.
Okay.
So I don't want to get too into the details.
That's doable. I think you can, there's plenty to talk about without getting into spoilers of this.
Say the plot.
Okay, sure.
It's a reboot of Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench.
No. It's from the same director, Damien Chazelle, who more famously did Whiplash. It touches upon themes of both of those movies in that it's like Guy and Madeline. It's a musical, although a much more ambitious musical than Guy and Madeline was. It has like a couple of musical numbers in it. And
Guy and Madeline has three songs, and La La Land has six.
Yes, and but and also bigger, splashier numbers. And Whiplash was about a jazz obsessive, as so is this. Ryan Gosling plays Sebastian, who is very hooked on old school jazz, and Emma Stone is Mia, a struggling actress. And
she works in a coffee shop on the Warner lot.
Right, but not the Friends-themed Starbucks that actually is on the Warner lot.
Yeah, this is a made-up one.
She goes on auditions, and he wants to open his own club. And they meet a couple of times and are, you know, kind of are prickly with each other. But eventually they fall in love, and they fall in love in a picture-perfect Valentine Los Angeles. And then have to sort of figure out where their own ambitions are going to maybe get in the way of their relationship. And it is an old school musical in that characters suddenly, you know, burst into song and dance. But it is also kind of a French New Wave musical in that these numbers are unfolding in a stylized but still recognizable world. And the singing is, I use the word naturalistic in my rap review. It's not. This is not Howard Keel we're talking about.
Correct.
Here. These are very.
Explain Howard.
Howard Keel was a big tenor at MGM, you know, and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers and Kiss Me, Kate, you know.
Yeah.
Old school. Big movie musical star.
Yeah.
And the singing here is more on the sort of plaintive scale.
I
love this movie a lot. I don't think it's perfect.
You've seen it twice.
I've seen it twice, and I'm glad I did. I have to say, it's rare that we get to see movies twice because who's got the time? And Pauline Kael always famously said she never saw a movie more than once. I don't know if that's true, but really? That was her claim, yeah, that she got everything she needed the first go around.
I don't feel like I've had time to see a lot of movies more than once.
Yeah.
But if I could, there are plenty that I would
absolutely
see.
Absolutely. Yeah. But no, I was lucky enough that I was able to see this one twice and to see it projected twice. And things that bothered me the first time, I was more warm to the second.
What bothered you the first time?
What bothered me the first time? There were I thought that my initial reaction was that they didn't go hard enough on the musical aspect of it. And I was comparing it to Guy and Madeline, which I thought also sort of dabbled in being a musical without really going all the way with it. In watching it again, I realized how much the music is there the whole time. And what it really boiled down to me was, I think Sebastian, the Ryan Gosling character, needs one more song in the boy loses girl moment. And that's not a spoiler because it's a love story and that's inevitable. That felt like a moment where he needed to have like a song that kind of expressed things. But beyond that, I think it works, and also I think the songs didn't grab me as much after one hearing, but they grabbed me more after a second hearing. Like, I'm sure if I saw Moana again, I would probably be more into those songs than I was after the first go around.
Right.
That was the main thing, I think, you know, but no, for the most part, I think it's lovely. I like the two of them. You know, this is their third film together, and I think they have really good chemistry. And I like the moxie of this movie, that it just sort of will have like a big, you know, musical number on a freeway on ramp, you know.
That is how the film opens.
Yeah.
It opens with a admittedly glorious musical number.
Yeah.
On a freeway full of stalled cars, which if you live in Southern California, you're familiar with that experience. Someday, somehow, some way, it's going to get you.
Yeah.
You're going to get stuck.
On a freeway.
On a freeway at a complete standstill. And you too, if you felt like it, could get out of your car and dance on the hood for a good 20 minutes without
budging,
getting in trouble in any way.
Not that the number is 20 minutes long.
That is how the film begins. It begins with it begins with a bang.
Mm.
And for the first 30 minutes keeps up that pace, I'd say.
Mm-hmm.
I only want to talk about it structurally.
Okay. And I think it bears pointing out before you get too deep into this.
Yeah.
That you watched an awards screener.
I did.
On our TV.
I did.
At home.
I did.
I think this is a movie that benefits
We have a large TV screen. And I sat very close to it. I had no distractions, and unlike you, I wasn't playing a boing boing game on my phone.
Bully for you. Yeah. Our TV is fine.
That's what you do a lot when you're watching our TV.
When you're making me watch Mariah's World for LKTV.
That's a podcast of the television, which is very important for you to watch attentively.
Anyway,
you need to watch TV shows attentively.
You have
for
not.
That.
You have
even
not,
Mariah's World.
You have
including Mariah's World. Hey, guess what, everybody? We have a podcast of the television.
It's true.
Complements the podcast of the cinema.
It's true.
It's called LKTV. You can get it if you are a subscriber at Patreon, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Subscriptions begin at $4 a month and go up from there, and you get lots of prizes and so much more enjoyment from our discussions of television programs, important golden age of television programs, such as Mariah's World and the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show.
Yes, indeed. Anyway.
And that's the plug for the whole episode.
Well done.
Let's continue.
I think that you would get more out of La La Land seeing it on the big screen. But you've seen it once and you saw it on a screener. What's your structural beef?
You have already made me promise to go with you to see it on a big screen.
Okay.
And I will keep that promise.
Okay.
Because I want to see what everyone sees in this film. Because I'm not sure that I do right now. Structurally, I have a bit of a problem. It kicks it out. It kicks out the jams for the first 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they stop singing. The music, as you said, does continue. His theme.
Yes.
His not jazz theme. That keeps recurring. And there is a lovely, beautiful dance number that is without singing.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful dance number at the Griffith Observatory.
Yes.
It figures prominently in the trailer because it involves them floating into the air.
Yes.
It's gorgeous. But I was sort of expecting, here's what I was expecting. I was expecting more songs
mm-hmm.
in that slog of a middle part.
I don't think it becomes a slog. There is less music, yes, granted.
And what music there is in the middle part is performance-based. So, like, you see the moment when he goes off to do a job that he doesn't necessarily want to do.
Right.
In the long run.
In Blueshammer.
To give him, yeah, exactly. To give him the means to open that jazz club.
Yes.
And we have to sit through the whole song, even though thematically, narratively, that song is meant to be an example of garbage.
Yeah, the movie is telling us that song's not good, and
but then we have to listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, that
and
is
so,
a weird choice, I grant you.
I was hoping for another sort of, you know, something as big and exciting as the opening. Like, I need a middle of the show.
Right.
Razzmatazz. I need something. And I don't know if this was budgetary or what, but give me a thing.
I
you know, because you know what happens in the middle of Dreamgirls?
And
I am telling
you,
I'm not going.
Yeah,
they make you wait for that. And that's just one person.
I did.
But that move, that moment.
Yes.
I saw it this in a press screening, and in that moment, it's a press screening of a movie, and people stood up and applauded.
It's true.
After she hollerated that song.
Yes.
Deservedly so. Middle of the movie, it's like a shot of vitamin B12 in your buttocks. I am telling you, I'm not going. Where was that?
Yeah, I would add at least I needed that. I am with you that I would add at least one more song
to this movie. I was getting drowsy.
Without getting into the specifics of it at all, did you love the ending? Because I love the ending.
I think, okay. He sticks the ending pretty well.
Yeah.
Like, if that was a gymnastics routine, he lands on his feet and raises his arms in the air, Damien Chazelle, and says, ta-da, and Mary Lou Retton. Like, yeah, the ending is lovely, just as the ending of another film that it is completely copying.
Yes.
It's well, like, yeah, oh, no, don't go well. There is a French musical from the 60s that this film is completely stealing its ending from. And
I would say
that's fine, which leads me to my other problem.
I would say that it is capturing the same feeling. It's not like doing a beat by beat ripoff.
It is capturing exactly the same feeling. It is not doing a beat by beat ripoff. You are correct.
Okay.
But I couldn't stop thinking about that other movie.
No. During the last part. I cited that in my review.
And so in by name?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then don't read that review, y'all, if you don't want to know the things.
Unless you've never seen a French musical, in which case it won't mean anything to you.
Yeah. So, here's my problem. I love those French musicals. Those Jacques Demy films.
Mm-hmm.
So does Damien Chazelle.
Well, yeah.
I love A Woman is a Woman.
Yes.
Godard's almost musical. Yes. Which, if... more than anything, this is what this feels like to me. I mean, there's plenty of music and there's plenty of stuff, but there's so much almost musicalness going on in this film.
Well, in A Woman is a Woman, you have all these songs that you get the first line of, and then they stop.
And then they stop.
This one, you're right. It creates a sensation that a musical number could break out at any moment, and often it doesn't.
And often it doesn't.
Yeah.
I think this is pastiche. This is postmodernism, is what this is. This is pastiche, and
but I think it acknowledges that. I mean,
it does.
When you have a character who works on a movie studio lot, and they talk about, oh look, there's the window from Casablanca.
Yes, there's a lot of meta stuff happening.
Yeah,
in it,
they go see Rome Without a Cause, and then they go to Griffith Park Observatory.
Yes, I would like there to be some new ideas. And I don't think there were a lot of new ideas here. And here's, now that we're not talking structurally anymore, I want to talk about narratively. I don't understand why these people are in love. Other than that, they're both young and attractive and they're ambitious. And I think that they are into maybe that about each other. And when things go wrong, it's because the other one stops giving the other person that. And other than the reason of, I think you could be someone great. Maybe you'll become someone great. Other than that reason, I don't understand why they like each other.
But don't you?
I mean, it's Ryan Gosling.
I was going to say.
Stone.
Doesn't that feel real to you as someone who lives here and who sees people get together in rays like that?
Yeah, and I think those people are dummies.
Well,
in real life, when I see that happening, I think, oh, that's going to last about 5 minutes. Once the booty wears off, what do you got?
Okay, but I don't think that means that you shouldn't make a movie about people like that, or that you can't.
Oh, you shouldn't make a movie about people like that. There are way too many movies about people like that. Most movies are about people like that.
I liked it. I liked that it was that there was pastiche going on, but there was also some very contemporary LA jokes as well.
Or okay, there were
jokes about just I mean, not even just about LA, but about just life as it is lived now. You know, that Manola had an interesting point in her review where she said that.
Did she like it?
She did.
Okay.
She said that kitchen sink realism is as played out as superhero fantasy.
Yes.
And that there is room for this sort of kind of magical realism, larger than life, like yes. old Hollywood magic
yes.
in a movie, and that not enough movies try to recapture that, and that this one does and does it really well.
I'm going to get a little specific here, but I'm not going to get spoilery.
Okay.
There's a line that Ryan Gosling delivers in this film, and not once do I hear anyone counter it. And if Damien Chazelle believes this, then I hate Damien Chazelle.
What is the line?
L.A. They worship everything, and they value nothing. Go F yourself. Seriously.
But no, come on. I think if he believed that, he wouldn't make this movie. And he wouldn't make this movie into such a candy box.
Then why doesn't... Then why doesn't anything happen that sort of counters that?
I think the movie itself refutes that. The movie itself presents Los Angeles as this kind of magical place. And I've never seen a movie that, you know, you talk about it just as being pastiche, but this is the first LA film I have seen that kind of acknowledges mm-hmm. its place as an actual place.
Yes.
And
an actual place where the people move around it like the cast of S Club 7 in Hollywood, well, by the way. Because the Lighthouse Cafe Jazz Club, a Southern California landmark since 1949, it's in Hermosa Beach. The Rialto Theater, that's Pasadena.
Okay.
You know where the Griffith Park Observatory is? Los Feliz.
Yeah.
These places are not close to each other at all.
But
you had time for three more freeway dance numbers to get to those places. Continue. Go on.
May I?
That's just a little aside.
May I speak
That's
now?
Just a little digression
okay,
about that, the geographic...
That is so irrelevant.
The geographic silliness.
Because, again, this movie is a fantasy Los Angeles.
Okay.
But I'm saying there are very few movies I've seen that portray Los Angeles as an actual city and as a city that everybody knows from the movies. You know, this is basically like... This is maybe arguably the first post-Los Angeles plays itself movie.
Maybe.
You know, the notion...
Maybe.
The notion that everything around us is...
I would say...
Or could be a set.
I would say Tangerine is the first post-Los Angeles plays itself movie.
But it limits itself to a very finite... I mean, yes, it gets the real estate right in a way this movie does, and it's very finite about this place to this place, and you could walk this long, and da-da-da-da.
Yep.
But I'm just saying in terms of the notion that everything in this city has been, is, or could be a set for some movie or TV show.
A little aside, Los Angeles Plays Itself is a stunning documentary.
And it's available on Blu-ray now.
About the history of Los Angeles as a location
in movies.
Continue.
Anyway. So I find that aspect of it really fascinating. I think... You can quibble about whether or not the characters belong together or how they've been written, but I think that...
Why is that a quibble?
Well, because I think that Stone and Gosling make it work in the way that a lot of classic movie pairings make you eschew logic as far as whether or not this man and this woman would be in love with each other or should be in love with each other when they're played by movie star X and movie star Y who make it so, you know, who bring so much to it to each other and together... Then you forgive that stuff.
I have actual quibbles to deliver right now.
All right.
When he comes to visit her on the Warner lot at the coffee shop,
yes,
she says, "How did you get on the lot?" And he says, "I just hauled ass past the guard gate." Well, guess what? No, you didn't. Not on the Warner Brothers lot, you didn't. Holy balls. There are studio lots in this city that you could conceivably
wiggle
your way into. The Warner Brothers lot is the least of those.
However,
you're not getting it.
It's
the Wonka factory. No one ever goes in. No one ever goes out. You have to go through 3 different security points. Right. I've been there many times. You have to go through 3 different security points to get on that lot.
You are nitpicking.
I am nitpicking.
Fantasy.
I just said these were my quibbles.
And let me tell you
these
something.
These are my quibbles.
Let me tell you something. Pre-9/11.
Nitpicky quibbles.
Pre-9/11, I used to temp at the glass building across the street from Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And I would walk across the street and get on the lot and go eat in the commissary because I was wearing a tie.
Pre-9/11.
Nobody stopped for me.
Pre-9/11. Yeah.
Granted.
I told you these were my quibbles.
Okay, these are my
nitpicky quibbles.
What other nits?
I got one more.
All right.
This is a plot detail, but again, not a big spoiler. At one point, she quits her job at the coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
Who's paying your rent? Who's feeding you now? Where are you getting that money from, struggling young woman? To rent a theater to do your own one woman show?
Aren't they living together at that point? Isn't he putting the bills?
They never say. She's at his place a lot, but
he's on tour, so he's making money. So I think he tells her to quit the job and write the show.
He tells her that?
Did I
forget that part?
I'd have to look at it.
Did I miss that part?
But it didn't stand out to me.
Here's the thing.
What's the thing, Dave White?
Quit nitpicky quibbles aside,
mm-hmm.
I do believe that there are enough problems reaching up through the mud to grab at this movie and pull it down that the good parts only kind of outweigh the parts that annoy the hell out of me.
Hmm.
I did not hate it.
Okay.
I'll say that I actually even maybe, in spite of all of the things I just complained about,
mm-hmm.
I maybe even guardedly sort of like it. I will agree to table this until you take me to see it on a big screen.
Okay.
And I can experience it the way it needs to be experienced.
We'll revisit at a later date.
I want to give Damien Chazelle that opportunity to make me personally happy. Because I know it's important to him.
In the meantime, would you give this a juicy red tomato or a green splat?
Here's the tomato I would give this. You know how you go to the... Okay. It's Monday, right?
Uh-huh.
And the farmer's market is rained out.
Right.
You can't go to the farmer's market.
Okay.
And because you can't go to the farmer's market, you can't do business with... My tomato guy. He's so adorable. My tomato guy is...
You come home talking about the tomato guy and the cheese guy.
No, not the cheese
the
guy.
The bread guy.
The bread guy. The French bread guy and the Mexican tomato guy. I have crushes on both of them. They'll never know this. But tomato daddy. I can't...
Tomato poppy.
Tomato poppy. I can't... I can't get my tomatoes from him because the farmer's market's it's rained out.
Okay.
So I have to go to Ralph's and get one of the rock hard red tomatoes that it's not even red. It's just that sort of like pink. You know those tomatoes that are no good? Hang on. I'm getting somewhere with this.
Okay.
And the only way you can make that tomato taste okay is take it home, you slice it up. Put on a baking sheet, drizzle a little olive oil on it, put it in the oven at a low temperature for like 3 hours. And then when it comes out, you've got this roasty, nice tomato that you can eat. That's this tomato.
Fair enough.
This movie is a hard flavorless tomato that you have to put in the oven for a minute. A lot of minutes.
All right. We'll come back to it after you
and
see
And now
it.
That's what I wish I were doing. I want to go get, I want to eat that post-oven tomato right now. I've just made myself hungry.
All right. Well, first we have to talk about Office Christmas Party.
Which is about an office Christmas party.
Yes. Who'd have figured?
It is a cast of dozens. A big, big ensemble.
Yes.
Cast. T.J. Miller, Jason Bateman, Olivia Munn.
Kate McKinnon,
Jennifer Aniston,
Randall Park, Vanessa Bayer, Jillian Bell,
Courtney B. Vance, Rob Corddry, folks.
Yeah.
All of whom, with the exception of Rob Corddry, who's not being very funny at all, most of the rest of them.
He's playing a character. He's not given much funny to do.
They get some moments.
Yeah.
To be funny. Especially, once again, Kate McKinnon.
Yes.
Do they give awards for people who come into movies that range in quality from to pretty good to okay? and who valiantly save everything around them?
She does work magic, whatever she's given.
I've said this before on this show, but all other comic actresses, you better look over your shoulder. Because she's coming up.
Yeah.
And she's already doing it.
She's casting a lead for something.
But it's about to get, her career is about to get real.
Yeah.
If there's any justice in the world at all for female comic actresses.
She's playing it's based on a book where she's like a witch who's a lunch lady. Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
The Lunch Witch. Grunhilda is her character's name.
Oh, you're looking it up.
I just found it. I'm stoked. It doesn't even matter. So, okay. It's a tech company. They're underperforming. TJ Miller is the goofy president of the company. His sister, Jennifer Aniston, is mean, and
she's
the interim CEO, and she's gonna close them down. She wants to shut down their whole enterprise, fire everybody,
the whole branch, yeah.
Take the losses and move along. TJ Miller wants to save the company by courting a new client, Courtney B. Vance, and to that end he decides to have a knockdown, drag out,
rager,
balls to the wall Christmas party like you used to get in Mad Men, only now with the dubstep.
Right.
And so they have one. And they destroy everything. And midway through, something goes wrong, and all the employees get wind of the fact that because something has gone wrong, they're all going to lose their jobs. And then one of them says, let's burn it down. And basically they do. Everything I'm saying is kind of a spoiler, but it doesn't matter because this movie is utterly inconsequential.
I mean, they try and bring it around to some actual sort of emotional something toward the end of the film.
Yeah,
but you're like,
stuff.
Yeah, whatever, you know.
When they do that, my thought is, well, you know, I've been feeling especially, I'm never pro-corporation, really, ever, because they own our lives, and it's a daily rock in my shoe that giant corporations run the whole world.
And they don't care about you.
And they don't care about you. But I've been feeling especially anti-corporate since the election, when we elected a charlatan scam artist, turd monster,
yes,
as our new president, one who's stalking his cabinet with evil, grasping
nightmare people,
nightmares, and I'm very much pro the idea of taking a company like this and destroying it. Like with like smashing the furniture and throwing things out the window, like that, like on that primal, rage venting level. I wish this movie had gone all the way with that, because I've already seen the film that does. If you never saw Project X, the teen party movie,
the found footage teen party movie,
you should, because it is one of the more pure examples of utter senseless destruction at a movie party.
I just remembered the third movie that we have to talk about this week.
Oh, we're going to talk about it. You didn't forget it. Okay. I didn't forget it either.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of Project X as you, but I will grant you that they do at least take it all the way. Matt and Christy compared this to Bachelor Party.
Okay.
And it's, sure, you know, it's kind of akin to that.
Yeah.
And yeah, they sort of, you know, they want to portray, like, the T.J. Miller character as somebody who has kind of been a goofball his whole life and been handed everything by his father. Like, that's why Jennifer Aniston's character hates him so much, is because he, you know, she's the one who worked hard and never got taken seriously, and he just sort of, like, do-do-do-do-do and got handed the keys to everything. But, you know, we're supposed to sort of love him and love his approach to how he takes care of his employees and that kind of thing. But it's like, I don't know that those guys exist.
Right.
He's a bigger fantasy than the party is.
So this is a funny enough movie.
Yes. I laughed enough.
I laughed enough to make me think, okay, I spent 100 minutes here, and Kate McKinnon, the day she can do wrong in front of me, I'll be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
But that day has not happened yet.
Yeah.
I would like to compare now this film to one that we saw earlier in the week called Believe.
Yes.
Why don't you tell people what Believe is about?
Oh, boy. Well, Believe is a Christian Christmas movie, and there's a doozy of a combo.
It's a Christmas movie that is also made by and for a conservative evangelical audience.
Yes, I should be specific about that. It is a faith-based movie, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Set in a small town. The small town has a big Christmas pageant every year that is a big source of income. That, you know, the town is proud of it. It's what they're famous for. And a lot of the local vendors make a lot of money on it. The one guy who apparently doesn't make money on it is the guy who has to throw the thing every year. He runs the local auto parts factory, Tool and Die.
Yes.
And part of his inheritance from his grandfather was that he had to throw this pageant every year. And there's a trust set up for that, but apparently because it's more expensive every year with the insurance and the this and the that, that a lot of it's coming out of pocket. So now he's dealing with factory layoffs and whatnot, and doesn't think he can do the pageant this year. And town gets mad, and somebody tries to kill him. They set his car on fire. This one kid finds him lying in the street next to his burning car and saves him, takes him back to the tenement where he lives with his mother, who was in nursing school but had to drop out. She nurses him back to health. He realizes they live in squalor. And then when there's like a big cold front coming in, he goes in to help them out, but discovers that all the other people who live in the tenement also don't have a place to go. So he brings them to his currently abandoned factory that isn't doing anything because everyone's on strike. The writing is terrible. They don't really explain the whole pageant and the inheritance and blah, blah, blah. But what it does boil down to is that the striking union is bad and that this guy is great, but he's suffering because he has to give 6 months maternity leave and his employees get to take 20-minute bathroom breaks, and how dare they? And then he takes all these homeless people from the tenement and puts them to work in the factory, and that's supposed to be a great thing because they're all scabs, but since the movie is anti-union, you know, whatever, that's fine. And then Christmas miracles and he learning and the Salvation Army, the end.
This film is from a man named Billy Dixon. Mm-hmm. He wrote it and he directed it.
Auteur.
This is his first feature, but he has worked in Hollywood since the 80s as a DP, a cinematographer.
Really?
On a variety of TV shows, like since the 80s.
Okay.
Ally McBeal and you name it, like One Tree Hill, all these shows. He's the guy, all right? Like 100 episodes of Ally McBeal. you know, and a million TV movies, and like he's got a credits list as long as your leg. So, you know, I'm sure he saved up his money,
or got some
church backers to do this thing. To his credit, it doesn't look horrible.
It
looks like a typical sort of Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like the aspirational level of most current conservative evangelical cinema.
True.
Make it look as good as something on the Hallmark Channel,
right?
And then you you have succeeded. Okay.
Even though they don't have an eye for detail in terms of like this freezing sub-Arctic cold front is coming through, and everyone's still walking around in shirt sleeves.
Yeah. The extras in the background are just wandering around. No one's helping them do their job. But the script is so convoluted and confusing that you don't actually know what side anyone's on until...
Or why people aren't telling each other certain things.
Yeah. So it's very badly written. Like, it makes me wonder who he allowed to read it before he just went full steam ahead and directed it from the page. But here's the worst thing about it. It's cruel in a very stupid way.
Yes.
And it is...
And a very unchristlike
way. And in a very unchristlike way. That's the craziest part. It shares plot themes with Office Christmas Party. It shares ideas about what is the responsibility of
an employer
to employees. Who makes a business go? In Believe, there is genuinely, literally a line in the dialogue that says there's a difference between the person who signs his name on the front and the person who signs his name on the back of the check.
And that you're supposed to identify with the person who signs the front.
Yeah. Well, guess what? I've said it once in this podcast, but go F yourself again. Because
without the people who sign their name on the back, you got nothing.
You didn't build that.
Yeah.
How you like them apples? You didn't. They helped you.
Plus you inherited it from your grandfather.
Plus you inherited the business from your grandfather. Exactly. That's also part of this plot. Just like Office Christmas Party. The business has been inherited by the siblings from the parents. So you didn't come along and make anything happen. You just took the reins. And you were a bad shepherd of the people who work for you and make the things that you're selling. And to that end, you screw them. Mm. Office Christmas Party, the people running the business are trying not to screw the employees at Christmas time.
Right.
They're trying to keep everyone in their job. In Believe, he doesn't care if he screws the people out of his job. At Christmas time. He hates the union so much and is so resentful of the union that has, you know, allowed his workers to have privileges such as
maternity leave,
weekends, 8-hour work days, maternity leave,
bathroom breaks,
sick days,
yeah,
confounded sick days, bathroom breaks. And I'm not exaggerating. He complains about all these things in the film.
This is basically a movie where Scrooge is the good guy.
does not have to change.
Doesn't have to learn anything.
Yeah, has to learn. Like, it's everyone else that has to come around and see what a good man he is. They even call him a righteous man.
Yes.
In the film.
And there, what's the line about how Jesus never said anything about the government providing charity or something?
Jesus did say pay your taxes.
Yeah, he did. That doesn't get quoted.
And let's talk about that for a second, too. We're running out of time because you've got to go to the Rogue One premiere tonight.
Woo!
I'm not going. You're going.
Yes.
And when I heard you were going to the Rogue One script premiere, mm-hmm. I thought, he'll really like that. Thank God I don't have to go.
I can take him or leave him. I have a friend who loves going to these, and I'm happy to take him.
Yeah.
And I have more fun watching him love this thing so much. So that's how it works out.
Than soothing me from hating every minute of everything.
That, but yeah. I mean, but left to my own devices, you know, I don't care for premieres that much. Although the Star Wars people do put on a good one, I gotta say.
In any case, here's what I love. And by love, I mean hate and want to kill.
The child?
Oh, that kid was the worst.
Oh.
Okay, but that's not even important. Here's what I love about conservative evangelical Christians who complain about government services
mm-hmm.
for people. They love to talk about how it's the church's job to do all the things the government does.
Uh-huh.
They don't do it. Can you imagine what would happen if there were no Medicare, no Medicaid,
well,
no Social Security, no welfare? You think the churches would take care of 300 million people in need if when those 300 million people needed something? You think the church is going to do it? The reason those things exist is because the church didn't do it. They didn't do it. You didn't do it.
Well, these are the people also who say the government better not touch my Medicare.
Like, yeah.
Where do you think it's coming from, genius?
Yeah. No, I know. But that's not what I'm talking about.
I know, but I'm just saying.
The church failed. The Christian church in the United States of America failed because they didn't do the thing they said they were like mandated to do by the Bible, by Jesus. So when you are ignoring the thing that your Savior told you to do the most, and the government has to step in and actually reduce the poverty of the elderly population, which is exactly what happened. When Social Security came along and Medicare and Medicaid came along, poor people got things that they needed. And they got those things because the church failed. So you're all a bunch of failures. So shut up about the government. Damn it. I'm so fed up with these people. And I'm one of y'all, by the way, just in case you're listening for the first time, I come from y'all. I know y'all inside and out, and you failed. The end. Watch Believe and then spit on someone that is associated with it. Tell them they're going to hell, because they are.
It's wretched, this movie. Yeah. And so antithetical to its own beliefs without even understanding what those beliefs
Office
even are.
Office Christmas Party is the Christian movie of the week.
Yeah, by comparison.
How you like that?
For
yeah.
sure. No question. What's your DVD pick?
I ain't got one. I'm mad.
why don't you recommend...
I'm all mad again.
Why don't you recommend the Criterion Jacques Demy box, which has several of his musicals in it?
Is Young Girls of Rochefort in that box?
It is.
The Criterion Jacques Demy box, you guys. It has the Young Girls of Rochefort in it. If you've never seen the Young Girls of Rochefort, your head's going to explode. Also, Umbrellas of Cherbourg. If you've never seen Umbrellas of Cherbourg, your head's going to explode.
Yes, exactly. And since we talked about it, mine is Jean-Luc Godard's A Woman is a Woman, which is fun. Letters.
We don't have time.
You're right.
You've got to go take a shower.
Okay.
You've got a movie
review. All right.
Sorry, letters.
Sorry. We're gonna do an all letter episode before the end of the year. Is that the deal?
We keep promising that. Yeah, sure we are.
Okay. Yeah. Why not? All right. As always, thank you for listening. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B Movies podcast and Cancel Too Soon with Bibbs and Whitney. The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. The Sewers of Paris. The Joel Ryan Thing. The Comics Canon. Fat Guys of the Movies. The Criterion Cast. Film Spotting SVU, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. I will be on the Vulture TV podcast in the next week or so talking about Christmas TV, and I'll post a link to that on our Facebook and Twitter when that comes up. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at LinoleumCast. You can subscribe for free at iTunes. Leave us a nice review there. It does help. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. You can stream us on Stitcher Radio, TheLounge.com, Podbean, Satchel, and CastBox. Also, Google Play if you're on the Android. And you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions or comments. That's also the place to PayPal us if you want our white letters on black linoleum knife t-shirt. We still have all of our sizes in stock, but we're down to the last men's 2XL. So if you want it, act fast.
$22.
If you're outside,
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
If you're outside the U.S., it costs a little more. Get in touch with us first and find out how much.
Right.
And again, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Join our club. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next week.
Goodbye.